Good morning, welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on the 24th Perek, the 24th chapter of Sefer Melachim Beis. And unfortunately, this now begins Golos. This begins where the exile process is rolling into action. So we're going to start off, we're going to focus on three kings in this Perek. It's a short Perek. They are Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Tzidkiyahu. Let's move through them quickly. The first over here is Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim, in the beginning, just to appreciate things, is Jehoiakim was the puppet of Mitzrayim. Remember, Yoshiyahu was killed. Yoshiyahu was killed. The righteous king was killed. And Jehoiachaz, his son took over, but was replaced by his brother, Jehoiakim, who is now the Egyptian vassal controlling Yehuda. And we're told that during his days, Nebuchadnezzar sent the armies, the hired armies, the mercenaries of various states, Gedudei Kastim, Gedudei Aram, Gedudei Moab, Gedudei Bnei Ammon, so that all these hired hands who come and attack and besiege the land of Yehuda, ultimately taking Jehoiakim from the land in exile, and he dies, and his son is placed on his throne. His son's name is Jehoiachin. Just to appreciate this over here is that there are a number of dates given out. So in this Perek, we're told that Jehoiakim is a servant for 3 years of Babel, and then he rebels. But actually, in order to properly appreciate the timeline here, we do need to actually synthesize this with Sefer Divrei Yamim, Sefer Yirmiyahu, and Sefer Daniel to get the fuller picture. So what the Radak does in the version that he has, again, there's one or two permutations of this, but this is the general idea is the following. We know from the end of the last Perek that Jehoiakim has 11 years of kingship. Here's how it works. The first 3 years, he was the Egyptian vassal. So he lived under Pharaoh Necho, paying Egyptian taxes. In the fourth year, that's when Yirmiyahu gives a terrible prophecy to Jehoiakim that his end is coming soon. And that's the year that Nebuchadnezzar sends the armies and the siege against him for 3 years. After that siege, so again, we're now into the sixth, going to the seventh year of Jehoiakim, he is finally captured and taken to Babel along with some of the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. And he stays in Babel. This part is debated how long he stayed in Babel, but assuming that it wasn't a long stay, he's actually returned to the land of Israel. And for 3 years, like our chapter talks about in Melachim, he serves as a Babylonian vassal. So that means to say now, at this point in time, he is now paying Babylonian taxes to the overlord and is doing their bidding. However, he rebels again. So now he rebels against Babylon. And at this point in time, the siege is sent back, and he is captured again, and is killed on the way down, dies on the way down, and is thrown to the roadside without burial. No, that's the sort of the remainder of the years at the end, about another 2-3 years at the end there, which brings us up to 11 years. Very complicated time. At this point in time, his son takes over, and his son's name is Jehoiachin. Jehoiachin does not last very long. Tanakh tells us over here that he ruled for a sum total of 3 months. Clearly, Babel did not want this man, Jehoiachin, on the throne. And the Tanakh tells us he did hara b'einei Hashem. He did not do good in the eyes of Hashem. Nebuchadnezzar comes back, besieges the city over here, and Jehoiachin comes out with his wife, his mothers, and is taken captive by Babel, like his father was. And all the gold is taken, the coffers are emptied, the kalim of the bais of Shlomo is taken to Babel, and along with them, 10,000 of the Gibore Achayel, of the strong soldiers, and the Cherosh v'Masger, all the artisans are taken. There's a brain drain of Yerushalayim. This is what's called Golus Jehoiachin. This is the first stage of the Golos. When we read Megillas Esther, Im Yechonya Melech Bavirat, when we talk about Nebuchadnezzar and that pasuk we say in Eichatun, where there is referring to the rebellion and the exile, that's referring to this moment in time. It's the first stages. The Beis HaMikdash is still standing. There is still Jewish sovereignty to a degree, but this is the first stage of Golos. It is worthy to note at this point in time that among those who are exiled is a man by the name of Yechezkel ben Buzi, who is going to act as one of the prophets, not in Israel, but interestingly enough, on the Nahar Kvar in Babylon. He's going to be witnessing the next stages of unfolding Golos as from the perspective of an outsider, which is fascinating. We're going to have to contrast Yechezkel's perspective of this period with the perspective of Yirmiyahu, who is his colleague, his senior colleague. The two prophets, same time, different places. So we're going to appreciate that as we start moving through their prophecies, Be'ezras Hashem. This gives us the context for them. It is worthwhile noting in the Mefarshim debate, there are different numbers given. It sounds like 10,000 here, in Sefer Yirmiyahu it talks about 10,000 and another 3,000. Were these at different stages, or were they actually referring to the same numbers? It is a debate between many of the Mefarshim. But nonetheless, we're talking about several stages of brain drain, of really the best and the brightest being taken from Yerushalayim. At this point in time, there's a person whose name is Tzidkiyahu, who is placed by the Babylonians on the throne. And this is where we're picking up over here. He rules for 11 years, a very complicated 11 years. And the Perek concludes by telling us, Ki af Hashem ha'esav Yerushalayim v'Yehuda, there was an anger of Hashem against Jerusalem until the moment that he was thrown down by Imrod Zikiel, Bavel, and he rebelled against Bavel. It is interesting to note that he is called over here, he is called unusually Ben Doidoi, the son of his uncle of Yehoiachin. This is not, the Malbim points out that that's not true. Zikiel is actually the brother of Yehoiachin. Okay, so just appreciate that he is the son of Yehoiachin, he is the brother of Yehoiachin. I know it's very complicated to put all these names together. God willing, the final Talmud is going to be sent out very soon, just to appreciate who, when, and how. One or two things just to think about in Yitzchiyahu's rebellion, and that is why in the world was Yitzchiyahu rebelling? He saw his father rebel twice. He knew that that everything was falling apart. What in the world is going on in Yitzchiyahu's mind? And the Mitzvah answers very simply, well, if you read the Pasuk on its Parshat level, its most basic reading, the reason is not logical. He did not do it because he made a decision. He made it simply because he was a vassal of Hashem, not Bavel. He was actually Lev Meyachah Melachim Biyad Hashem. His heart was in Hashem's hand, and Hashem made the decision on his behalf because Hashem had a greater agenda over here, which was bringing Golus about. And that's a terrifying idea, but that means to say, in a certain sense, Tzidkiyahu was the facilitator of God's plans. It is complex, because if we read Sefer Divrei Hayamim actually implicates him not just with generally Vayasa Rabbeinu Hashem doing bad things, but also that he didn't listen to Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu was crying out now at this point in time. Yirmiyahu was the prophet who lived at the same time as Yoshiyahu, Yehoiakim, and Yehoiachin and Tzidkiyahu. So Yirmiyahu was present for all these kings, as we're going to see. We're going to see his different prophecies. And he was telling Tzidkiyahu, he was telling Yehoiakim, don't rebel. Don't make alliances with Egypt. Don't make alliances with Assyria. Don't rebel, you're going to be squashed. You don't have the zchus to fight. And Tzidkiyahu did not listen to him. That was one of the other sins that he's implicated in. Another one is that he did not do tshuva. This is explicit in Divrei Hayamim. So it's a little more complex as to his sinning. And when we go to Sefer Yirmiyahu, we'll see that Tzidkiyahu has a complex relationship with Yirmiyahu too. Tzidkiyahu, on the one hand, saves Yirmiyahu from those who are trying to kill Yirmiyahu. He listens to Yirmiyahu in a private way. He gives Yirmiyahu great respect. At the same time, he doesn't listen to Yirmiyahu about foreign policy decisions. It's a very complex relationship. Tzidkiyahu is a weak person at a very, very difficult time, where there are people who are vying to create relationships with Egypt, to make an alliance, to fight Babylon, at the same time as being told by the prophet of Hashem not to attack, and the false prophets in the audience who are going in the opposite direction. Very, very complex, very, very trying time, and ultimately, when it comes back to his name. And that's what Chazal point out here, as quoted by Rashi in the Gemara in Horios, Yud Aleph on the base. The word Tzidkiyahu does not come from the word tzaddik, as in meaning to say righteous. That was not a description of the righteous king being taken to Babel. It's not necessarily because of that. It is because it's coming from the word who of esadin. What does Yitzchiyahu mean? Hashem will ratify the judgment through you. Meaning to say, ultimately, Yitzchiyahu is becoming the vehicle of the historical movement that Hashem has decided to make based on our actions, and he is going to ratify it, and that's where the word tzedek comes from. And unfortunately, he is that person in history who is bringing it about. This concludes this section, and the last perek remains before us tomorrow. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.